You're listening to The Midday Grind with Martin Kilcoyne and Charlie Marlowe on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Getting fired, but I figured I'd have it all by the time I retired. I'd have me a car worth at least $100,000. I'd get it one piece at a time, and it wouldn't cost me a dime. You know it's me when I come through your town. I'm gonna ride around in style. I'm gonna drive everybody wild, 'cause I'll have the only one there is around. So the very next day when I punched in with my big lunchbox and with help from my friend, I left that day with a lunchbox full of gear.
Hey, where in the world is Kenny? Kenny Wallace yesterday was on a plane. Today he's in a car or truck. I'm going to go truck. Pickup.
Definitely truck.
I'm going to go truck.
Unless it's a rental.
Driving to Chicago as we speak. Kenny Wallace with us. Kenny, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yep. I think I'm kind of like that movie, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So, yeah, plane yesterday and an automobile right now.
What's your mile mark? I've got you past Staunton, but not quite up to Kankakee just yet.
No, I screwed up. I got up this morning when I wanted to. That was good, but I needed to empty the trash. Then the dumpster was full, so I had to cut boxes. You know, I had to smash things down. I had to take my whole body, get in the dumpster, and smash the trash down. Then my granddaughter showed up, and I had to just love her as much as I could. And then when I came downtown 55, like I'm coming to the Busch Stadium, the exit is closed. So I had to go all around the Lumiere and get over to the Stan Musial Bridge. So I'm only over here, exit 9, over here by Collinsville. I got a ways to go.
So, Kenny, we know you're great on social media. You put a lot of stuff out there. How did you not, and I haven't checked, maybe you did. Did you videotape yourself in the dumpster jumping on the garbage?
Hey, there's a trick to that, Charlie. So when you think your dumpster is full, what you do is you take a razor blade and you cut all the bags, because the bags got air in them. Then what you do is you take cardboard and you put cardboard on top of the trash bag, because you don't want your foot getting into like food and things like that. I'm telling you what, man, you can smash your trash down every bit of 2 feet. So there is a key to making room in your dumpster.
This is a public service announcement. You know what? Have you ever thrown a really large item into one of those large trash bins that are like industrial, and you're dumping something like a shelf or what, and you throw it, and then you think, good God, what if like a homeless person was in, like it could kill a person when you throw something huge? That's another public service announcement. Maybe look, even though your car's running and you're in a place you're not supposed to be dumping it and you're trying to do it quick and get away, in theory, be careful.
We've all done it. We've all done it. I'll admit it right now. Now, the key to that, Martin, is make sure you take your address off of everything. Because, yeah, you know where I'm going.
Yep.
Because my brother Rusty Wallace, over 30-something years ago, it was late one night. I don't know why we did it, what the reason was. But we went, you know, over there by Valley Park. Our race shop was down there. I mean, we're talking late 70s, early 80s. And me and Paul, we put a whole bunch of trash in the dump. Somehow we got around the gate. And sure enough, man, the law caught us. Well, that's what they call the police down in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's called the law. Up here, we call it the police. So the police called us, and we're like, how the hell did we get caught? Well, they went through our trash and found our address. So, the key to using other people's dumpsters, I'm telling you right now, make sure you don't have your address on anything, because if they get pissed and they're like, who keeps filling my dumpster up, they will find you.
This is true. These are great tips from Kenny Wallace. It's Tuesdays with Kenny, except it's actually Wednesday. He's driving to Chicago, but you spent a couple of days in the Texas area outside of Houston, Corpus Christi. Tell us how that trip came about and what you and your wife were able to see and do.
I have a good friend named Ken Hobbs. Ken Hobbs is from Corpus Christi, Texas. Years ago, Ken reached out to me in my NASCAR career we became good friends. I texted him and I said, Ken, how are you all doing? I'm worried about you. He said, oh, Herm, it's complete devastation down here. He says, it'd be awesome if you could make your way down here, you know, in the next month or so. And I said, oh, my God, I'm coming down right now. And you know, there are things in your life that you just have to do, and maybe it's the older I get. You know, I understand that, you know, sometimes we think, well, other people got that covered. I'm not going to do it. And you know what? And I'll tell you, I'll never forget that quote that John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what can you do for your country? In other words, you know, we all live around people that always want people to do for them. Give me, you know, and sometimes you got to look yourself in the mirror and go, have I done anything for anybody? You know, I mean, I do stuff for people all the time, but you know, to that extent, I just really felt like I needed to do it. So me and my wife flew down there and we gathered up a whole bunch of money and, you know, some friends and, you know, we put in a lot. And I got to tell you, it was unbelievable devastation. And, my gosh, I just couldn't believe that that was happening right here in the United States.
What did the people say when you had a chance to interact? You say, hey, I'm Kenny Wallace. I'm, you know, a racing guy, and I'm just here to kind of spread some good cheer. What was the interaction like?
Well, you know, we were scared to death because we had this load of money. You know, we had $100 bills and $20 bills, and we were kind of crazy a little bit. It's like, hey, let's take all this money down and give it out. But my buddy Ken Hobbs, we were in Port Aransas. It's really an odd name, but Port Aransas is almost like a Lake Ozarks, except on an ocean, okay? So we went to Port Aransas, which was like also like a Myrtle Beach, and it was completely wiped out, just unbelievable. Nobody, no electric, nobody could live anywhere. People were being fed by this nice group on a street corner. And we were lucky enough that my buddy Ken Hobbs knew a police officer there. The police officer's wife, she was a blessing to us. She said, okay, there's a couple down here that have four children, and they just got nothing. They're just living in a tent. And I just, my wife, we had these envelopes, and we put my racing postcards in the envelopes. And instead of me introducing myself, we would walk out, walk into their house, and these couples would be in their house tearing the sheetrock out, just sweat and tears, I mean, and I would go, hey, we're here, we have $1,000 cash for you. And they'd look up and their eyes would get real big, and I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating, my hand on a Bible, they would literally fall to their knees and start crying. Because insurance is going to come months from now. These people, and even if you get your insurance, you can't find companies to rebuild your house because everybody's taken up. So, you know, they were just completely distraught. Then we would go to places where people would come and get food, and I would walk up to people, and I would say, hey, my name's Kenny Wallace. I would introduce myself there, and I'd peel off like $100. And they'd look at me like they were seeing a spaceship. Their eyes would get big, and then they would just start crying. And you know, it is unbelievable. But in Texas right now, Martin and Charlie, I'm telling you the truth. In Texas right now, imagine yourself. You know, these people down there, they don't have family close, right? So they're just out of their home, and they're living in tents, no electricity. They're hotter than hell. You know, so anyway, yeah, they were very emotional when a stranger walked up and we were giving away basically $1,000 apiece. We would understand the situation. And so we had like 5-6 people that were destitute, and we gave them $1,000 each. And, now it wasn't all me. It was me, a buddy named Steve Neighbors. I drove his race car in Texas. And then a buddy of mine up north, Ricky Lemons, and then Ken Neighbors. So we gave away quite a few dollars. directly to the people, no intermediate people, and it was well worth it.
And Kenny, did you give the money away based on need? Did you go up to random people? How did you choose them?
That lady that I was telling you about, her husband is a police officer. Her name was Kensley. And what we did is we were in a buddy of mine's car. So in the car was me, Ken Hobbs, my wife Kim, and my buddy Steve Neighbors. So there was four of us. And then in the very back seat was Kensley, which makes a fifth person. And she was the one telling us about everybody. And when she would say, okay, these people here are married, they have four children, and they're destitute. They have nothing. Their home was wiped out. We'd look at each other, and we'd all agree, yes, $1,000. Then there was a couple that lived upstairs, and downstairs they would make, like, fruit drinks. Because remember, this was on the beach. And we said, okay, those people, husband and wife, let's give them $500. So people that had children, we would give $1,000 to. And then the couples, we'd give $500 to. Then the people that were walking up and getting food and things like that, you know, just individuals, we'd give $100 to. And so, you know, that's kind of the way we did it.
Kenny Wallace with us. You can see him on FS1, Fox Sports, all the NASCAR coverage this weekend. It's Chicago, and a busy weekend at Chicagoland because you have the top NASCAR series, you have the Xfinity, you also have the trucks are there. It's a triple header of sorts, racing just outside of Chicago, and we also have the championship. The playoffs are underway in the field of 16, Kenny. Who do you, I'll give you a couple. Give a couple of names that you like to maybe win the whole deal.
Well, I actually got an email last night from my bosses at Fox Sports, and they're gathering up all the, you know, I tease you about this. They call you, Charlie, and me, they call us talent. So they send this email out to all the talent, and they say, give us your, you know, it almost be like a fantasy pick. But they wanted me to give them the four that I think are going to be in the very last race at Miami Homestead. So in the end, there will be four left 10 weeks from now. And I chose Martin Truex. I chose Kyle Busch. I chose Kyle Larson. And then I chose our seven-time champion and last year's champion, Jimmy Johnson. Now, Jimmy has not been running good, but I take the old Ric Flair approach, the great wrestler. To be the man, you have to beat the man. And Jimmy Johnson has an incredible way of, like the Cardinals do, right? Oh, it's playoff time. Let's get our ass in gear. So Jimmy Johnson, he did that last year, shocked the damn United States and the world, and won and just stunned everybody because at the time he was not very competitive. So Jimmy Johnson, he's not my choice to win it all, but he's in my final four.
Kenny, before I ask you another racing question, so I don't forget, we got a text after you talking about giving away all the money down in Texas, and this person says, Kenny's testimony to giving has me frosty-eyed, making me want to do something towards the relief efforts. Thank you for this interview. So people really enjoyed that, Kenny.
Well, you know, let me say this. You know, there's a lot of different sides to you and Martin and me. And, you know, we're on TV, we're on radio, we're not a bunch of idiots. You know, we do our job, but we also have a home life. And, you know, we have to do things like this. Listen, I don't have a lot of money, okay? You know, I mean, what is a lot of money? You know, is it $1 million? Is it $100,000? Is it $100? And, you know, I still go back to what John F. Kennedy said. You know, quit asking what everybody can do for you, damn it. You know, we run around St. Louis looking for handouts. Give me, give me, give me. Damn it, do something for people. Quit asking for people to do stuff for you. You know, and I know we're tight in the Midwest. I get that. I grew up that way, too. But, you know, you get a couple buddies together down there around Jefferson County. You know, hey, give me a $100 bill. Or, okay, I can't afford on. Okay, give me 20. Give me $20. Just do something. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, you gather up a lot of money from your buddies, you take a trip down there, and it's the right thing to do.
So, Kenny, back to racing. Danica Patrick, she loses her ride, right? Now, do you think, does she stay in NASCAR? Could she go back to open wheel? What do you think?
Well, listen, I don't get joy out of, you know, being a mind reader. But I will say this. I know Danica very good. You know, she's my buddy Ricky Stenhouse's girlfriend. And Danica, if you go to her, she loves Instagram. If you go to her Instagram, it is almost as over the last year, she is an incredible healthy cooker. She's always on Instagram giving people ingredients for good health food. She works out unbelievable. She works out. She writes books. I really think that she does not stay driving a race car for a long time. I think she's getting closer to having a line of Danica Patrick clothing, food, workout. I mean, that's what I think. Whether she does that or not, I don't know. But Danica has done an incredible amount for auto racing. She's inspired a lot of ladies, a lot of men. She's the real deal. Listen, she's a firecracker. You know, she really is. So I admire her for everything she's done.
And I know you're on the road there. We'll let you go. And then next week we'll get more in depth when it's the first place Cardinals that we're talking about after a big weekend, because not only are you in Chicago, the Cardinals are in Chicago at Wrigley for the weekend. Let's hope they can do it, and let's hope we were all wrong all season long.
Hey, you know what? We go back to 06. Remember 06, the one-game playoff in Atlanta, and then we win the World Series. So, you know, we cannot be negative. I mean, I told you a couple weeks ago I thought we were just about done because O was not pitching good and Wainwright was gone. And, man, that offense is making up for the pitching right now. So we will see.
Kenny, good to talk to you.
Good. Thanks a lot, gang, and talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
See ya.
All right, Kenny Wallace, Fox Sports 1 again. He's going to be up there at Chicagoland Speedway, part of the NASCAR coverage on FS1's become a real popular member of their racing coverage.
On the text line, somebody's suggesting a new segment called Smash Your Trash. Say it in the Smash voice.
We're going to take out the trash this week, you Seahawk. We're going to poop on you birds. And then you say, we'll
take out your razor blade, cut up your garbage bag, put on some cardboard and jump on it. You'll get about 2 feet on your dumpster.
There's a lot of trash knowledge going on in there.
Love it.
Break here. Let's talk about the Wiffle Ball Tournament. Let's remember to do that because that's coming up real soon.
Wiffle Ball Tournament, Francis Park. Great time. It is the fourth annual charity Wiffle Ball Tournament. Benefiting Birdies for Bipolar, Mike Wellington's fantastic charity. It's presented by Bud Light, DB Sports Bar, Gold's Gym, Country Financial, and 7-Up. The fourth annual Wiffle Ball Tournament will take place on Saturday, September 30th at the gorgeous Francis Park in South City starting at 10 a.m. Sign up your team of four players today on InsideSTL.com for only $150 per team. This includes round-robin group play with winners advancing to the knockout rounds. There will be barbecue, beers, mixed drinks, and water for purchase, all from our lovely friends over at DB Sports Bar. So sign your team up today while teams still remain. And even if you don't play, Martin, come out and enjoy the pony exclamation point.
All right, a little housekeeping here on air.
Housekeeping.
Brendan, we're going to keep it here. And Gardner, I'm going to give you this phone number. John Mozeliak says he is ready now. I'm going to pass you that piece of paper while I tell you about Triad Bank, the friendly neighborhood bank right there in Frontenac on Clayton Road, just west of Lindbergh, about a block west of Lindbergh. On the web, it's triadbanking.com. Got a great lobby. I think Strix is probably there right now, just hanging out.
Drinking coffee.
Friendly vibe. That's what you get when you walk into Triad Bank. And it's been around St. Louis since 2005. Jim Regna, the pride of Rosary. I figured that. Remember last week, had to do a little housekeeping, got it wrong.
It happens.
Local guy, that's the whole point. Rosary in the banking business and started up Triad Bank in 2005. The great thing about that is they're from St. Louis, so they understand the St. Louis climate. So if you're a business owner looking to do more business, they know exactly how it works around St. Louis. We know how weird this town can be. You need somebody who can help navigate through it. That's what Triad Bank can do for you. And you can take it to the bank at Triad Bank. And if you do, the tellers will be there. They're friendly. Seriously, the friendly confines of Triad Bank. It's in Frontenac. It's across from the mall there. I don't think they call it a mall because it's fancier than that. But it's actually Frontenac Plaza. But right across the street is Triad Bank. Stop by us for Jim Regna by name. And again, you can find him on the web at triadbanking.com. And with that, we welcome in the Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. Mo, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I would imagine life is better. How encouraged are you by the last, you know, let's say, week and a half or so? Are you sleeping better?
Well, I think, Martin, the good news is whenever you play a season, having the month of September count just makes everything better. And what I mean by that is baseball's a long year, and there's always ups and downs, and no matter what level of frustration you have, nothing's worse than when those last 30 days don't mean anything. And so, you know, it's really encouraging to be playing better. It's encouraging that we are playing against our division for pretty much the remainder of the month, and therefore, in a lot of ways, we sort of help control our own destiny.
Yeah, and your style, you'll always talk about the long game, and you're keeping an eye on the future while trying to win right now. I think that can frustrate some of your fans who are saying, do something right away. Are you ever tempted to kind of get off of that blueprint, which the Cardinal way typically in recent years has been to be kind of patient? Are you ever tempted to do something more impulsive?
Well, not really. Which I know it's not a popular answer, but you know, sort of my example would be when you win the off season, how often does that mean you win the season? And you know, I think that a lot of the frustration sometimes is everybody appears to think they have the right answer, but you know, we are in this for the long haul, and we are in this to look at our past 10 years, and we're proud that we've been a pretty successful organization. I think the only team with more wins than us would have been the New York Yankees, but yet we also understand that there's that desire and passion to get it right now. So, you know, there's that fine line, but you know, overall, I don't think I'm going to reassess our blueprint or how we think about things overall.
Mo, is it also natural, though, maybe even for you, when you see a guy like Luke Weaver coming up and having so much success, to think, man, should we have brought him up a little earlier?
Well, you know, it's funny because those types of questions are all hindsight. And, you know, I think Luke, when we brought him up a year ago, you could tell there was still some development that needed to happen. And you know, the great news is he took advantage of that. And now you're seeing what we had hoped we would see when he was ready. And so when you look at young players as they develop and as they grow, the timing for their success is something that we're always trying to tap into, and hopefully we get it right. But you know, there are growing pains in this league because it's hard.
And there are still, I'm sure, roster concerns that you have. Let's say you do make the postseason. Do your concerns about this roster change at all if you end up playing in October? Or is your off-season to-do list not change depending on what happens over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think, you know, in fairness, you got to see how things play out. But I think our overarching theme will be, you know, we have some outfield depth. When you look at our bullpen, there's going to be some needs to address in regards to that this offseason. So I think, you know, our strategy is going to probably be pretty transparent and pretty clear. But the who and the how may change.
And when you see a Flaherty pitching in big games now at this point, and Weaver has been really good in his opportunity, how much of what they do down the stretch makes the 2018 decisions easier? In other words, if they had a great AAA season, you like them, you feel good about them, but you don't really know, how much does it impact your rotation thoughts for next year when you see them pitching, I guess, in the big leagues late in a postseason push?
Well, I think, you know, having major league success certainly helps us make decisions, but I don't think it's the end-all, be-all for our decision-making. Clearly, somebody like Jack Flaherty, who's obviously pitching at the big league level, who would have just finished his junior year in college, is certainly eye-opening from that standpoint. But, you know, if he still needs some seasoning or some time, we can be patient.
John Mozeliak with us, the president of baseball operations, talking about the Cardinals' stretch run here. Two back of the Cubs and seven head-to-head with Chicago. And if you look at the season as a whole, John, I think, and I said this on Twitter and I immediately got crushed because you can't say anything good about Mike Matheny without the pitchfork out there coming after you. I think Mike deserves credit because you've had a ton of injuries. There's been roster shuffling. What's your assessment of the job Mike's been able to do this year?
Well, since I'm fearful of the critics on Twitter, I'm going to have to answer this differently. No, I'm kidding. I think he's done a very good job. You know, I think for some reason, no matter what anyone thinks about him in a positive light, there's always going to be that negative voice or the vocal minority, if you will, to point out that he's not good. But, you know, I really feel like given all the ups and downs, given some of the roster challenges that he's been faced with, he's done a good job managing this club. And, you know, like I said earlier, at least to begin this show, you know, making September count matters. And, you know, certainly you'd love to be, you know, celebrating a division clinch already, but, you know, that doesn't always happen. And to be in contention and to be competing for one, I think really bodes well for all of us.
And it does seem like the younger additions, we always talk about it's that spark or something, you know, mixes things up a little bit in the clubhouse. Do you think could you go to them earlier? Do you learn anything from that in future years where, hey, listen, you know what? Like last year, Reyes was great. Could we have gone to him sooner? Bader has helped us. We sent him back down. Does it give you any kind of insight in the future that maybe we got to have a youth infusion every season? Because it does seem like it changes kind of the vibe all the way around. Is that something that you hope to do earlier in seasons ahead?
Well, you know, again, I feel like these are just sort of hindsight questions where when you look when Bader came up, he brought, you know, a fresh step to the team for sure, but then, you know, struggled offensively, went back down, focused on a few things, and his contribution's been a lot stronger in version 2.0, which is good to see. And I think, you know, a lot of times we sort of lose sight of what players need to work on and what they need to address, and it's a lot easier to do that when you're in the minor leagues versus at the big leagues up here. You know, wins matter, record matters, and performance matters. And so, you know, how you think through that is always that fine line that either a player will benefit from or a player may not, but you're trying to do what's right on not only behalf of the player but on behalf of your club.
And Mo, here's a good hindsight question. Paul DeJong, you mentioned some other guys.
Is there such a thing as a good hindsight question? That's
because
my question.
He just mentioned a lot of guys who, you know, it's natural to kind of struggle the first time up. Did you think that Paul DeJong, since the call-up, would contribute the way he has?
You know, I think from an offensive standpoint, we sort of saw what he's done. I mean, we felt like he'd have some pop. Walks, strikeouts would be something of a minor concern. I think the biggest surprise for us is just defensively how well he's held his own, you know, we just really haven't missed a beat. And from a defensive standpoint, he's really given us that little extra bounce. So it's great to see. You know, I think when you talk about that sort of youth infusion, the one nice thing about somebody like DeJong is that he is young. He can handle the sort of the day-to-day rigors, and you know, he doesn't seem to be one of those guys that needs a day off. And when we're pushing like we are, we have a lot riding on his shoulders, and right now he's making the most of it.
Do you feel like this offseason a lot of it is about clarity? Because you have a lot of outfielders, you have a lot of pieces that can play certain areas. I won't say cluttered because you're winning games, but do you feel part of the obligation this offseason is kind of define the roles and make sure that you have, maybe you don't have too many pieces?
I think that's fair. You know, there's sort of that argument where you never have enough depth or you never have enough talent, but there are also that point where the X and Y cross, and at some point you got to have enough playing time. And so when you look at our collection of depth in the outfield, it's pretty clear that at some point something has to give. And, you know, we saw that same thing happening with our starting rotation, too, and that's why we felt like we had to do something with Mike Leake and, you know, ultimately started to work on our offseason 2 weeks ago.
And when you did that deal, I think you said even in the conference call after the trade to Seattle, part of it was he needed to pitch that Saturday game, give him one more outing. How difficult is that? Because you know behind the scenes that maybe Seattle even says, hey, give him another start, or I don't know that showcasing is the word. But in the meantime, people like me are saying, oh, my gosh, give it to a young kid. Why start him again? But maybe that was part of the deal. How difficult is it to do your job? Because you can't necessarily tell us what's going on. How hard is that?
Not very. It's just part of the job. You know, you certainly want to have an organization, a front office that has transparency in what you're trying to do and what your goals are, but there's also times where when you're trying to do in the best interest of where you're trying to make happen, sometimes you just can't discuss it, can't advertise it. But, you know, for me, if you know, for example, that start had gone bad, you know, ultimately I'd have to wear it. But, you know, all things considered, it worked out.
And for some of your players, they saw it as not throwing in the towel, but instead of adding veterans, getting rid of a veteran. And I saluted the move. I thought it was what you needed to do at the time. But people said, well, you're not adding on. You keep taking away. And the add-ons have been the younger players. You did get Nicasio, who has clearly helped in the bullpen. Do you talk to players when they seem to be concerned about the direction or lack of urgency? Or, again, do you just have to kind of ignore it?
I'm an open book in that regard. If someone wants to discuss something with me, it's sort of funny though that it's probably not something they're going to address with me. But they're welcome to if they want.
So Mo, adding a Juan Nicasio after September 1st, was that kind of reacting to the standings and being in the race?
Well, not really. We've been trying to add bullpen help since late July. So you know, just once you get past that July 31st, it becomes a little bit more complicated with regards to the waiver wire. But, you know, it was an opportunity that once Philly claimed him and put him back out, we knew there was a chance. And so, you know, ideally this would have been something we could have done a while ago. But, I mean, you and I both know that Pittsburgh's not going to trade him to us. So
right.
That would have never happened. So, you know, you just have to be opportunistic and be prepared.
And is that a guy you'd like to see back here next year? I mean, I know it's early, but...
It is early, but I do think getting players into your system and getting players that, you know, even a month, you get to know them a little more than if they're just a random free agent, I think you can benefit from.
All right, every year is different. Every year is difficult. Guys get hurt. Trades are made. But was this one more challenging? I mean, you had to do some things with the coaching staff. Talked about people's jobs being on the line. It seemed to be a little more stressful maybe than some of the past seasons.
Well, I think part of that is because of the expectations. And, you know, we went into the year with high expectations on this season. I think St. Louis wants and demands a good baseball team. And, you know, we just weren't doing things right. And when you're dealing with mistakes that most of us would agree should be preventable is a high level of frustration. And so, you know, having to sort of reshuffle and reassess, even if it's midstream, I felt like it had to be done. And, you know, I'm happy where we are. And certainly I hope for continued success.
So we're seeing less of you because Mike Gersh is now the GM, but I'm wondering behind the scenes, so you make deals for Nicasio or the leak trade, is that you and Gersh working hand in hand? How does that role play out?
It's a little bit of you know, who's connected with what team and relationships, but still very much involved in the day-to-day.
John, one of my notes here was, tell Mo to have more fun. I had written down that you
he
weren't
is.
As much. I want you to have fun. Are you more fun now than you may have been a month or two ago?
I think I'm having more fun, sure. I mean, look, it's an exciting time, and it's as I said earlier, I mean, it's fun coming to work when you're competing for something.
And it's fun coming on this show when your team's winning, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say it's probably more fun because Gersh does more of the interviews and Mo doesn't have to talk to us.
I was thinking that he
much.
Didn't miss us. That's kind of my point.
Yeah, I don't miss you guys. No.
I think that's
I see
fair.
Enough of you.
That's fair.
That's true.
John, good luck the rest of the way. Looking forward to it.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, John Mozeliak, right. The president of baseball operations with us here on 590 The Fan. I was thinking of that yesterday because I worry about like the really unimportant stuff. And I saw Mike Gersh, the general manager, holding court yesterday with the media. And I thought, Mo doesn't miss this because it's part. I mean, I don't think he minds. He enjoys doing interviews at times, but just the constant barrage. Like if you told Mike Matheny today, pregame, you know, Mike, we'll skip the media duties. I think he might do a cartwheel, possibly, if you told him that today is a day you're not.
To Matheny. Agreed.
What I'm saying, to all of them, I think it gets to be, what do I got to do? Okay, they're going to ask me about Dexter's hip. Okay, they're going to ask me about Jericho's hamstring. They're going to ask me about, are we trading Leak? When are we calling up so-and-so? There's probably a monotony to it. And to be honest, there's a lot of days we don't want to be there. But I was thinking yesterday, Mo's probably like, hey, Gersh, looks like it's your turn to talk.
I do think, though, that Mo seems to... like to talk ball, though. You know what I'm saying? And if you're the GM or the president of baseball operations, lately, and I guess it was a trend that I think started this year, they would talk on the first day of every homestand. And then also if there's a move to be made. But I would think talking to the media once a week, it's not that bad. I do get it, though. If you're Matheny and every day, even though it's part of your job, you're paid very well. And also, you're not talking to the reporters, really. You're talking to the people. You're talking to the fans through TV, radio, and the print, what the reporters are writing and putting on their platforms. But I can see how that would get annoying.
So like 1,000 people could parade through and say, "Hey, Mike, when's Waino coming back?" And then he can answer the question. Then another guy comes through, "Hey, Matheny, what about Wainwright?" Like, well, I already answered it. And then if you just say it once or twice, then the commish gets on his keyboard and types it, then everybody knows.
Correct. That's the answer. I think that's the role of the media, to kind of be that, what would you call it, liaison?
Conduit.
Gatekeeper. Keymaster.
You know what? In hindsight, I think that was a pretty good interview.
I agree.
In hindsight. People like that stuff. You know what? You'll never get from Mo or DeWitt, what I think Cardinal fans is, they want to like break him. Do you know what I'm saying? Like if you had him in the witness stand.
Why though?
No, because they would say, "You didn't do this soon enough." And they're like, "No, but it's worked out okay. We believe in what we're doing." They believe in what they're doing. They have a history of success. Does it frustrate you at times as a fan or as a media member? Absolutely. But what I'm saying is they believe in their process. It's what they do. That was sort of my question about, do you ever rethink your game plan, your blueprint? And the answer is no. This is kind of how they go about it. They're not going to change. And for the most part, it's worked. But I think a fan wants them to say, "We kind of blew it. Shouldn't have signed Leak. Wasted money. Should have called up Reyes sooner." You're not going to get that, is my
point.
That
one's fair, though. Because Reyes last year would have been in the bullpen.
But I don't think they're going to say, they'll tell you why they didn't do it sooner.
I understand that. I do think, and that's what I asked him about Luke Weaver. This season, you also have to remember, Leak was making a lot of money. He had a stretch there where he pitched really poorly. And that last outing, as you called it, a showcase, they were able to trade him, opening up a spot for Luke Weaver, who has been outstanding. Remember, Adam Wainwright is on the DL right now. It's a small sample size with Flaherty, but everybody likes what they see so far. But also remember, even if you look at Adam Wainwright's numbers, Brennan Schaefer, we've talked about this all season
poor
long.
Schaefer. He's going to have to wear this forever.
I was trying to engage him in the show. He's probably
texting,
doing a poll
tweeting,
here.
Texting.
But as much as we've talked about Adam Wainwright's numbers on the mound not being what we've seen in past years, which is natural because we all get older. I know people don't like to admit that. What? They win 2 out of 3 of every games Adam Wainwright pitches. And he's out there hitting and helping the team win. So it's easy to say, okay, replace Waino. But then look at the numbers, and the Cardinals actually just win games when he's out there. So you do need a spot for these guys, the Flahertys and the Luke Weavers. And you can make the case, hey, sit Leak. That's tough for teams to do when you're paying a guy $16 million a year. They're not easy decisions, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and Michael Wacha, they were extremely patient with him, and I was ready for Wacha to get a couple of starts off to the point I was down there. I'm not from one of the coasts, but I was holding the team accountable. And I said to Walker, it was after a decent start. It was sort of the one where we thought he was on the ropes. Like if he does poorly, it was a Sunday game, I believe. And if he had done poorly, maybe that would have been it. And I said, are you aware of all the talk? Bullpen could be next. And the team had actually said that is a possibility. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. Like maybe he did. He was playing dumb or he really hadn't been told about it. But they stuck with him, and Wacha has turned into a very reliable starter, somebody who's actually given you big starts in September. And so that long game can work. And it's 162. Now, like in the NFL, maybe the long game wouldn't work. In the offseason, it might, but it wouldn't work week to week. So what my point is, they believe in what they're doing, even if it'll drive you crazy as a fan or a media member. Do you know what I'm saying, Brendan Schaefer?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how many different narratives we have throughout the season. How, you know, for a time, it's because the bullpen is bad. Then it's you need an impact bat. Then it's too many veterans that aren't producing, young guys. And, like, here we are in September still talking about the Cardinals just a couple of games back. And it's just weird for the roller coaster ride that it can be that – time and time again, their methods do tend to kind of work themselves out over the long haul.
And I think if you had them on the old Kilcoin lie detector,
Kilcony,
they would say
Martin Kilcony.
They would say, don't we deserve the benefit of the doubt a little bit because we have on the whole kind of figured things out. And that may come off as arrogance.
But it's true, and it's fair. They're not the Rams.
Right.
They've had ridiculous success. Sometimes I think we forget about that, and then you'll have people in the text going, oh, you're not holding them accountable. I mean, he's one of the best execs in baseball. They have world championships. They have many trips to the postseason. I mean, don't you like that as a fan? I think, too, it also gets into the fact that you talk about the long game. I've always said that for sports talk radio and kind of the hot take world we live in, baseball is the worst sport for that. Football, if you have 12 games in college or 16 in the NFL, you can make some sweeping judgments about the game you just saw because it's one out of 16. Now, I understand doing that maybe on a weekly basis for baseball, but when we come on and we have to fill a radio show or TV or articles every day, I mean, look at the Dodgers. People were talking about the Dodgers being the best regular season team in the history of baseball. They went like 40-10, and now they can't win a game. You know what I'm saying? And we have these sweeping judgments back in April. We forget about them 3 or 4 months later.
Now, even if you win 90 games, maybe you win the division, whatever this great run ends up doing, maybe it falls short, who knows. I don't think it changes your offseason to-do list. And Mo was pretty honest about that. He said, I think that's fair. You still have a cluttered roster. Cluttered sounds kind of insulting, but for the most part, it's cluttered. I think Joe Buck said they have 4,000 pieces for 8 parts. I think that's about right. So even if you're playing in an NLDS series or a one-game wild card, it doesn't change the fact you got to move some outfielders. You got to think long and hard about, boy, how can we be better at base running? Because we couldn't be a whole lot worse. It doesn't change that. It doesn't change the fact that the bullpen needs some help next year. You have options. Luckily, you have a lot of young pieces that are still in play. But my point is, no matter how this ends, the offseason questions that were there a month ago or 2 months ago, I think, are still there.
But I do think questions that we had, let's say, 3 or 4 months ago. What's the three things most people pointed to? Impact bat, shortstop, closer. And there's other pieces the Cardinals need as well. Now, Trevor Rosenthal was really good right before he got hurt. But let's see what happens with Juan Nicasio. And maybe he finishes out the year strong, and maybe you do want to bring him back on a 2-year deal to be that de facto closer. You might solve that issue. Now, Paul DeJong, whether he's a shortstop or a third baseman, you certainly want this guy on your team. He's your three-hole hitter. So again, there's a question that's already been solved. Now, clearly they need another bat. They need, you know, if DeJong's going to hit third, whatever you need the four-hitter. I know Jose Martinez is a great story, but you need that feared impact hitter. I do think that they've lessened some of their needs, even with the case of a Luke Weaver. Aren't you fine right now with giving Luke Weaver 30 starts next year? I understand he won't be able to throw 200 innings. He's a young guy. Now, Flaherty, it's going to be a smaller sample size. But I do think, watching some of these younger guys come up, I do think they have fewer needs than we were talking about months ago.
How about a couple of game balls? One to Frank Cusumano, who I believe stumped Derek Gould today, which never happens. It's usually the reverse. Usually Derek will get Frank and freeze him for a second.
No, that wouldn't happen.
No, Frank today said to Derek, what happens tonight if Flaherty doesn't pitch well? Do you go to Wainwright in 5 days? And Derek actually pivoted and said, wow, that's a really interesting thought, because you are in a pennant race. My thought was Wainwright might not be ready that quickly to make a start. But it was interesting because Frank, he got Derek to freeze on that. So game ball to Coos for that. And also game ball to Chris Raby, Radio Wars. He works at another station, I guess. Had me as a guest on the Cards pregame, on the Cards radio network.
The reporter's notebook section?
Yes, which was, I
haven't been asked.
It was really embarrassing.
The reporter's notebook,
yeah.
It's called? And you said it on the show?
I was asked, and it was really embarrassing because I didn't even have a notebook, let alone much knowledge. So I said to Raby, you know, this is the 144th game, which means they probably had Derek Gould like 30 times, Stan McNeil 20 times. So I said, I see how it is. And he said, no, we saved the best for last.
Mm. Oh, that's how you spin it.
Felt like a Tuesday against the Reds.
Is this a joke?
Yeah, that's what I said. But honored to be. So thank you to Chris Raby. And, you know, we've had him on Fox, too, like 20, 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
He said that's the ratio.
Good text on the text line. Maybe, I don't know if we're supposed to wrap up the Mozeliak interview and the Cardinals conversation, but Delino DeShields texting in, How do you see with all the balloons in the studio? Media in this town is soft.
Yep, they're... well, the thing is... I can go off on a rant, but...
Do it.
I don't have time. The thing is... I got a thing. And we got a break.
Give us a sneak peek.
No, I'm just saying, people that act like the Cardinals are the Rams, it's ridiculous.
That's my whole
point. The Rams were a horse bleep operation. They were run poorly. They didn't deserve fans in the stands. They made terrible decisions over and over again. This franchise makes some bad decisions. Absolutely. But on the whole, they've been pretty good. That doesn't mean you give them a pass on everything. You can point out. See, I disagree with Matheny when he says, well, no matter what people said about us earlier this year. No, what they said about you earlier this year was fair. Your team wasn't playing well, and it looked ugly at times. That was all fair. I know Mike, his job is to defend his players. But the criticism of the team earlier this year was totally legit, totally fair. But on the whole, people, they just can't, I don't know. Maybe it's a really small percentage.
I think it's a reaction to the people we see on social media, some of the kind of town criers where, look, even if they don't make the postseason, we all want them to make the playoffs. Even if the Cardinals don't, so what, 2 years in a row, you fall a game or two short of the playoffs? I'm not saying that's acceptable.
You don't want to settle.
But you have to understand that you literally can't make the playoffs every year. You just can't. Even the Yankees don't anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of a new world of baseball. If you're in there 8 out of 10 times, 7 out of 10 years, that's what you're shooting for, and that's what the Cardinals have done.
Yeah, and I think what they have to commit to is, all right, this year, if we win 87, 88 games, it's not bad, it's not terrible, but it's not good enough.
You're not happy with that.
You have to position yourself then to begin, quote, another run. How do we load up? And I think they would say, we're going to do that with our young arms. That's what we're going to ride into the next 5 to 7 years. By the way, Nick, I think Nick is one of our Courier listeners, said discussions like the drive-through one are the best part of the show.
And the Mosaic interview.
And he said, I hate the McDonald's two-lane system. Hey, Window World is a great St. Louis success story. 2003 is when they began doing business here. WindowWorld.com is the website. So whether it's new windows, siding, patio doors, all of it online. WindowWorld.com. Set up an appointment at 993-1800. Even better, stop by and see them. Showroom in Bridgeton on St. Charles Rock Road. You can check out these windows for yourself, but everyone that you're going to get in your house is custom made. So it's a free estimate. They'll come out and measure the windows. Custom made, low cost, high quality windows. That's what they're all about at Window World. 75 local employees, real involved in the community. Big fundraiser every year. Jim and John do a big trivia night and give that money back to local charities. So it's a St. Louis business here. Find them at windowworld.com. Low cost, high quality, great warranty, supervised installation. Window World, one of the two windows as the good housekeeping seal
housekeeping
of approval. Again, 993-1800 if you're ready for some replacement windows or siding, patio doors. It's 314-993-1800, windowworld.com. I'm out to tape an interview. Charles, this is your big moment.
Oh, yeah.
Take the mic and run with it. It's the Midday Grind. Martin Kilquin, Charlie Marlowe, Chris Gardner, Brendan Schaefer with you tomorrow live at Patios. Looking forward to that. We've got a day game tomorrow. Always fun to be down there. See you then. But in the meantime, Chuck, it's all you, buddy.
And also, maybe a huge guest tomorrow at Patio's.
Right
out
of
the
gate.
Another hour of the show. It's going to be great. Grinder coming up next on the Midday Grind. 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.
It takes 4 essential ingredients to brew Bud Light. Barley, rice, water, and hops. But this is a 30-second commercial. So, here's the sound of barley malting.